Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. This is your host, Dr. Mike Roizen, and this is 1208B. We are brought to you by Life's First Naturals, the makers of Trubiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue, as well as the Longevity Playbook. And you can go to both of those websites, longevityplaybook.com, to sign up for the free newsletter, or Life's First Naturals with an S.com to find the randomized double-blind studies that show the benefits of Trubiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. We're coming to you from both Cleveland Clinic and Mount Sinai, the ITAN lab. And we have a wonderful guest discussing a really stimulating subject. And of course, I will try and put her on the spot as usual. Her name is Meltem Kars, K-A-R-S. She is a member of the ITAN lab, ITANLAB.org, if you want more information, at Mount Sinai, and has done, by the way, she's both an MD, PhD, and she's done groundbreaking research on the genetic link between inflammatory bowel disease and Parkinson's disease. And Dr. Kars, the way I look at this is you looked at patients with both Parkinson's disease and inflammatory bowel disease, inflammatory bowel disease alone, and Parkinson's disease alone, and found a very interesting one gene abnormality that was common between the two, and that was the LRRK, LRRK2 gene. Tell me, what does the LRRK gene, does it produce a protein?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me. LRRK2 is leucine-rich repeat kinase 2, which is a protein. It helps to transfer substances between cells, and it has a major function in phagocytosis and autophagy, which are physiological processes to remove foreign substances from the body.
Now, it has immune functioning as well, that protein?
Yeah, it has been shown to contribute to both Parkinson's disease and inflammatory bowel disease before. It has an inflammatory function through autophagy.
Does Parkinson's disease alone have an abnormality of this gene, or is it just the combination of the two together?
Yeah, LRRK2 has been long known to cause Parkinson's disease, and some other mutations in LRRK2 has been shown to contribute to inflammatory bowel disease, more specifically Crohn's disease. But it was not immediately clear which variants are contributing to Parkinson's disease or which variants contribute to inflammatory bowel disease. So we wanted to investigate all possible LRRK2 missense mutations to investigate in detail whether any variant that cause both conditions.
Now, Parkinson's disease, as I understood it in the 50s and 60s, was largely related to, if you will, the follow-up from the Spanish flu. Obviously, you weren't looking at patients from that era, but would the dysfunction of LRRK2 also be associated with viral instances of Parkinson's disease, such as we actually now fear with COVID-19 follow-up?
Well, those kind of microorganisms can be seen as foreign microorganisms, so LRRK2 has a big role in eliminating those kind of microorganisms from the body. So these can be the connections between infections and LRRK2 function.
So once you've found this unique association, which you have, what's the next step to helping people? Is there a direct correlation to being able to change the function of that or to upregulate the normal function of it?
Yeah, it's possible. We actually identified 13 other novel genes together with LRRK2. All have functions in both autophagy and inflammation. Controlling inflammation in patients with IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, which is a chronic inflammatory disease, can help to reduce Parkinson's disease incidence. This observation has been also shown in several previous other studies that use anti-TNF agents, which is an agent to reduce inflammation in the body, help to reduce Parkinson's disease risk.
Does it reduce Parkinson's symptoms after they've already started, or is it only reducing the development of Parkinson's disease?
The studies that were conducted so far showed the reduction in development of disease. I don't know any study that tried using anti-TNF agents in PED patients, Parkinson's disease patients, yet.
So just to give our listening audience, anti-TNF agents are used, or TNF-alpha agents are used in rheumatoid arthritis and many of the inflammatory diseases. Humira is the largest selling of these, largest selling from a dollar value, I think, biologic in the world, and it's a TNF-alpha inhibitor. So one of the things that obviously comes to mind is, do TNF-alpha inhibitors help with inflammatory bowel disease in general?
Yes, it is a common medication used in inflammatory bowel disease treatment.
And from what I heard, you've not seen studies of them in once people have developed Parkinson's disease, as I understand it.
Yeah, to my knowledge, there has been a clinical trial that tried to utilize anti-TNF agents in PD, a Parkinson's disease. However, the results have not been published yet.
So what are you pursuing now along, this is really innovative research. We should say it was funded by the Michael J. Fox Foundation, as well as the National Institute of Health, National Institute of Neurologic Disease. What are you working on now?
Well, since we identified several pathways shared between Parkinson's disease and inflammatory bowel disease, our first aim would be developing new therapeutic targets to inhibit functions of these overactive proteins, such as LRRK2. One of the leading authors of our study, Dr. Inga Peter, also previously conducted a study using LRRK2 inhibitors in mice, and the results show that LRRK2 inhibitors reduces the inflammation in colons.
So there are LRRK2 inhibitors that are available. Is it repurposing another drug or is it a new drug?
Yeah, those anti-LRRK agents are developed for treating Parkinson's disease, so it will be a drug repurposing.
Are you working on that in the mouse model, or you're in the lab now, so in a unique position to look at mouse models, but are you able to also translate it? We should say that you've come to us via Turkey, and you studied in Turkey, and one of the joys of being in the United States is we get very bright people from other countries to come and develop things in this country. So I met Dr. Oz's parents were also that way, and Dr. Oz and I worked closely together. He was actually born in Cleveland, so we can't call him an immigrant but his parents were. So his father actually was a postdoc at the Cleveland Clinic when he was born. But in any case, going back to your work, are you planning on moving this into treating patients, or are you going to continue your work in the lab? What do you want to do in your future?
Well, my expertise is actually in computational biology. So we are collaborating with wet lab researchers very widely. So as a person, as a researcher, my future goals are investigating these associations in diverse populations, because in this study, we utilized 67 patients with Danish ancestry. So the next steps will be investigating this comorbidity in diverse populations, such as African-Americans, admixed Americans.
To me, one of the most interesting things is if you look at computational biology, the area that you're in, that's really a new area since we didn't have, if you will, genome associations before the Human Genome Project, clearly in 2002. It got completed in 2001 and 2. I always put people on the spot with one test question that's totally irrelevant to your work, but is fun for our audience, I hope. Do you know what the Human Genome Project cost when it was done It was done both at NIH with John Collins's group and Craig Venter's at in private, and they cost about the same thing. Do you know what it cost?
I don't know, but it should cost so much money because they were cloning all these genome segments into a bag.
Right. It was $3 billion each, 2.9 and 3.1. And then I tell the public, if you want to get the same amount of information as they got, the same amount of SNPs, you can do that for how much now?
Well, I guess around $100.
That's exactly right. It's about $100, except on Mother's or Father's Day, where at Walmart they sell it for $70. So that's right. And a complete genome is clearly around $800 now, much more. So the work you do was really made possible by the investments in NIH that have been done, as well as the work you do. And that's the great thing. If you think of how fast these fields are moving and your field is moving, it's because of the great reduction in cost from, for example, $3 billion to $100 that's occurred. So the LRRK2 inhibitors are a reasonable approach to look at for both preventing Parkinson's disease in people. Can we tell who's got the genetic abnormalities? Are these acquired or are these genetic abnormalities from birth in the LRRK2 gene?
Well, yes, there can be several other approaches to detect carriers for these genes. These are inherited mutations, not somatic mutations. So it's possible to develop some targeted approaches to prevent disease, or at least not prevent, but take some measures to prevent severe disease.
So it may be that you will be able to treat people early in life with LRRK2 inhibitors and be able to prevent both inflammatory bowel diseases and, in fact, prevent Parkinson's disease. Is that what I hear you saying to me?
Yes, exactly. Our study results show that it's really important to control chronic inflammation in gut to prevent chronic inflammation in brain. So when a patient with IBD comes to a clinic, it's really important to treat patients accordingly, not to have so many relapses, so much inflammation, to prevent both extraintestinal findings, diseases, and Parkinson's disease.
There are simple lab tests for inflammation, but I don't know if they detect this type of inflammation early that would lead one to go and get a specific genetic test. But do any of the current inflammatory marker tests, such as we normally do highly specific C-reactive protein for cardiac disease, or we do myeloperoxidase for activation of white cell diseases, or IL-6, or even ESCD rate. Are there any of these that show abnormalities routinely that would point to we should do more genetically?
Yes, actually in clinics, both C-reactive proteins, sedimentation rates are really important to follow up patients, of course, together with other clinical findings and some other endoscopic findings. So these can be used to detect inflammation.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Dr. Kars, K-A-R-S, a MD, PhD in the Charles Bronfman Institute for Personalized Medicine at Mount Sinai Hospital. The actual connection is the ITAN lab, ITANLAB.org, to find out more information. And she's been teaching me about the genetics of Parkinson's disease and inflammatory bowel disease, and shown how there's this association with an abnormality in the LRRK2 gene, and that inflammatory mediators may be able, inflammatory, I guess it would be called drugs that decrease inflammation relating to this, and specifically relating to this, may be able to greatly modify the clinical course of inflammatory bowel disease and maybe prevent Parkinson's disease in such patients. Thank you very much, Dr. Kars. Thank you, our listeners. It's you who we do this for. 50,000 of you a week can't be wrong. And I'm sure you've learned a lot from Dr. Kars, as I had. Thank our sponsors, Life's First Naturals, the makers of both Truebiotics and Bovine Colostrum, as well as DiRescue, useful when you're adding a increased dose of the GLP-1s, Wegovia, Ozempic, Zepbound, or Mounjaro, and LongevityPlaybook.com, where you can sign up for the free weekly newsletter with its cartoons, which I love. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. We hope you are. And I'm going to try and keep Dr. Kars on speed dial so that we can get her back with the next breakthrough she has. This has been a real triumph of computational biology and her work. Thank you very much, Dr. Kars. We'll see you next week. We hope all of you.